Good afternoon, and hope people at the back of the room can hear me clearly. Otherwise, I can speak louder. It's late afternoon, so there are people who need to take a nap, and I can keep my voice down. But thank you very much for all of you being here. One of the good things about having a session in a corridor at the back of the thing is that then you have participants who really wanted to be here. They were not just passing by. So this is definitely a very interesting topic. And let me first recognize that this is a collaborative work. Actually, Lizanne Brown, Nebiyo Baby, who is here. Neb, yes. And Snigda were other participants in putting this together. But we have really a broader team that is working on this. And I can talk to you more about this. So my name is Anjum Khurshid. I'm the Director of Health Systems Division at the Louisiana Public Health Institute. I'm also hold a position as a Clinical Assistant Professor at the School of Medicine in Tulane and an Adjunct Professor in the School of Public Health. I direct the Crescent City Beacon Program in New Orleans. I know how many people have heard of the Beacon Community Programs? So, which is an Office of National Coordinator for Health Information Technology funded 17 communities across the country, and these were communities that had a high adoption of health information technology. And the task was that wanted to understand how health information technology can help in improving population level outcomes. And these communities were given quite a carte blanche in terms of what kind of interventions they will choose. So the Text for Health program that we'll be describing here is a part of our community's own decisions of what are the key uses of health information technology to improve healthcare outcomes. We, of course, have a lot of work in the improvement and transformation of the delivery system, which is around care coordination and improving exchange of information among providers, clinics, hospitals. But when we were asked to identify innovative ways of how technology may be used for population health, we actually developed this Text for Health program that I'll describe more about. So I'll describe broadly, very briefly, mobile applications in population health, the program itself, and then we'll also describe some of the evaluation that we have just started. So Louisiana has one of the highest diabetes mortality rates in the country. It's about 36 per 1,000, 100,000 population. It also has one of the highest diabetes prevalence. Any of you who have visited New Orleans can probably understand why, but especially in New Orleans, which is about a third or fourth of the population of the state, almost 6 out of 10 people are at risk for diabetes, according to BRFSS. And while this is, of course, diagnosed diabetes, we know that for every two people who are diagnosed, there is a third person who is undiagnosed with diabetes. And there are also, while there are probably 25, 26 million diabetics in the country, there are about 80 million pre-diabetics, people who will become diabetic in the next 6 years. So we are really addressing an epidemic of diabetes in this country. But mobile health technology has a documented trend towards what is called a digital divide in reverse. So when you are really thinking of how can we impact some of these population level outcomes, then cell phone or mobile phone technology is something that you would normally think of if you are thinking of innovative ways of changing population outcomes. Of course, the benefit of this is that it is a very customized service, but you can still think of a public health approach on how you do this, and that's what we have done that I'll describe more. So it is not a mobile app as we were talking about, it's actually mobile health application as has been developed for population health. And our program was of course started with the discussion with the Office of National Coordinator that we were thinking of innovative ways of using technology for population health. One of the largest population health programs in this country is the Text for Baby program, because it has over 300,000 now. And I saw Pam Johnson from Voxiva, she might know that the number has increased beyond 300,000, but that's kind of roughly the number, which is continues to increase. And over 500 organizations. So it was really, in some ways, a public health program as well, because it is not just a company or a a department that is running this program. It's a bunch of organizations across the country that are running these programs. So using that example, if you look at the literature on mobile health, really there aren't many large population-level studies, especially in the U.S., that have used mobile health applications from a population management perspective. A lot of them are clinic-based interventions, universities, medical centers using mobile health for patients that were already identified. What we are doing is really thinking of how can you use mobile health with a population. And that's why it's unique, because it will be for sure one of the largest public health programs that is looking at mobile health applications for prevention of a chronic condition like diabetes. And this, so we basically last year, then actually in San Diego, not very far from here, announced at the American Diabetes Association a consortium that will be working on developing an application in mobile health for population management that focused on prevention of diabetes in populations. And our partners included the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, so they're both their diabetes education and diabetes prevention divisions were involved in developing this, because we wanted this to be evidence-based and also involving other agencies that have been following this trend for a long time. American Diabetes Association was a partner, Office of National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, because they deal with the standards of how information is exchanged in the country. HRSA, in terms of evaluation, they were doing some evaluation on mobile health before. Voxiva, which is the company that developed the text for baby with Health and Human Services. So we worked with the same company because they had an international experience of doing this in many other countries, and we wanted to work with the best in terms of developing this. And of course, consumers, as was mentioned here. This was an important part of this. Consumer engagement, I think, is really the area in which we wanted to place this. If you were going to place this is not a clinical intervention. This is not just a health education program. It's actually a consumer engagement program. We want to engage consumers into their health because any chronic condition, especially diabetes, as a physician, as a care provider, you can't really make much dent in population outcomes unless you have patients and consumers participating in that. So they are the ones who have to take the medication. They are the ones who have to change their behaviors. Because of this consortium, we really wanted to develop a body of evidence that will help other communities and other programs to understand what is the best way of using mobile health technologies for population outcomes, for really changing population outcomes. So we don't really start with saying, let's develop some cool app and then try to market it. We actually start by saying, what is the need, where does it fit, and how will we use it, so that it integrates with the rest of the things we are doing in the healthcare system. So it is not just a something which is just fashionable, it's not something which is just technology-oriented. It is actually something that looks at the population first and then goes back from there in terms of where we want to reach and what do we want to do. The advantages, of course, of using mobile health applications for diabetes. In our case, as a Beacon community, we were doing a lot of interventions with community clinics, safety net practices, hospitals, in terms of improving chronic care management in the community. That's how you change some of the population outcomes. But we realized that there is still a population that doesn't come to the clinics and doesn't go to the hospital, and they are still at high risk for diabetes, or they might already be a diabetic and not know this because they have not been screened. So how do you reach those populations? You can't reach them just through the doctor or the nurse or the care manager or the outreach coordinator. You can't just reach them with television ads and newspaper ads, because we have been doing that for many, many years, and our rates for diabetes and et cetera are increasing. So a cell phone technology, of course, is something that has in the last few years really become ubiquitous. Everybody almost carries a cell phone. As I said, it's also not something that is determined by socioeconomic status, which would be, if you're thinking of an iPad, if you're thinking of even computers and internet, you are in some ways also affected by the socioeconomic determinants of who owns it, who uses it. But with cell phones, at least everybody used it. And the reason that, as we looked at this, we also realized that New Orleans, which has a very high poverty rate, as you can imagine, and issues of literacy, just generally, health literacy more specifically, which is another area that, you know, is important in development of these tools. That just the simplest form of intervention in terms of a cell phone and SMS texting technology, maybe from where we want to start if we want to reach these hard-to-reach populations, which otherwise are also probably have other disadvantages in terms of their literacy, education, and other things. But there were other benefits of doing this from a population health perspective. Of course, cost is something that you always think of. So if you are looking at a pilot, then you say, well, I want to do this for the 4 million people in Louisiana or the 300 million people across the U.S., then managing something like that is important. And the cost of doing something which is an SMS-related intervention is really minimal. The scaling up of that is minimal as well. So there are several advantages of doing this, but of course it's very convenient, easy to use, and widely available. And then our purpose of developing this for diabetes was with the thinking that we could do this now for managing cancer patients, for managing asthma, for managing other chronic conditions, in terms of developing what are best tools of reaching these hard-to-reach populations. So now I'll describe the program briefly. So our programmatic goals were basically three. One was to increase the understanding, you know, awareness of personal risk. So the benefit of using a cell phone is that you could almost customize through an algorithm what is the risk of individual users, right? We could otherwise go out and have big billboards saying most people in New Orleans are at risk, and everybody reading it would say probably I'm the one who is not at risk and everybody else is, and they should all be changing their behaviors. But in this case, you can customize it to individuals so they know what their risk is. And we work with, again, we work with CDC and ADA very closely to make sure that when we identify a person at risk, that that is supported by evidence and literature on what are the criteria for identifying somebody at risk. The second was to engage patients actively in managing their health. As I said, consumer engagement was one of the important goals of trying to develop a tool like this for population management. And third was to not only tell people that they are at risk and encourage them to get involved, but actually also giving them some tools of how they can get involved. So using their location or zip code to identify what are the nearest clinics where they can go and get screened if they are at high risk. What are the kind of activities that are happening in their vicinity where they can get involved and that will reduce their risk for diabetes. So those are broadly the three areas around which we developed this program. And this is a schematic that shows kind of what we use. So if you see on the left side when it says the system collects, so these are the questions that, so this is the only time we get initially the information to assess someone's risk. And many of the people who work in healthcare would recognize that this is based on actually a multi-generational study that looked at outcomes for heart disease over a period of time and identified what are the four or five really important things that increase the risk. So we know for each one of these what are the risks, and there is, of course, a lot of evidence on how BMI, how age, gender, you know, family history, etc., affect your risk for diabetes. So we basically, when a person enrolls, they text a certain number, 300, 400, or 311, 411 in this case, and say health, and then they are asked, so they get an initial message, and then they are asked a few questions. It's in a very friendly language that makes it easy for people to relate to the program. And then basically once we have collected this, then it uses that algorithm to put people into different categories, and it tells them whether they are at high risk, at moderate risk, or at low risk for diabetes. It also has a categorization according to just BMI. So if people just answer the first two questions and they don't want to answer the rest of the questions, you know, age, gender, etc., then we can even use the categorization by weight and put them at high risk, low risk, etc. And then based on that, there are different messages that are sent to them, and these messages were developed again in consultation with experts who on diabetes education and diabetes prevention, but also with several focus groups that helped us identify what is the language, what is the frequency of messages in a week that people are comfortable in receiving, and what is the content that they can understand. And then there are three broad types of messages. One is, of course, related to their educational motivation. So it tells them, you know, some facts about diabetes or what they can do to reduce their risk, and motivates them. So if a person has not exercised in a week, then it says, well, doing exercise is great. We've also had customized messages where near Mardi Gras, there were messages that would say, well, you can try to walk with a Mardi Gras parade. So we know everybody is drinking and eating during that season, but still they can do physical activity and still enjoy the occasion. So customized messages like that. But then there are goal settings. So because another thing that we wanted to do was, of course, the self-management aspect of this, a huge opportunity for people to not only get educated, but then you also motivate them to do something about it. So they can set their goals about exercise, about weight, basically. And then every weekend, they are asked to put in their number of days that they have exercised or what is their weight. And there are appropriate messages that go with it. So I usually try to do like 4 days of exercise in a week. And then if I do three, then the message will come back and say, three is good, but you should try to do four next month, next week. So more customized messages like that. And then finally, local connections or messages around local connections. And this is just as we were developing it, how we were developing these. So we had categories of messages that were, again, vetted by experts. And then we spread it out over the week. So you're not getting like three messages at the same time, but they are spread over the week according to the risk. And the enrollment criteria was basically anybody could enroll as long as they were adults. So we didn't want to get in the issue of, you know, minors and consent and those kinds of things. So 18 and above, anybody can enroll. But we had focused on the 18 for 44 as a target population because a lot of this was about really prevention, not about treatment. So you want to catch them early in terms of getting engaged in this healthcare process. This was piloted in the Greater New Orleans area to begin with. It's the first year. We later on, actually, through the Beacon program, also had two other beacons in Detroit and Cincinnati use the same program. So we are now actually, there are three communities that are piloting the same program in different ways, with different populations and different areas. But we are, again, centrally also comparing the results so we can understand really how would mobile health applications be most effective in different populations. And right now, at least for the pilot, it is in English, but of course, you know, as we spread this around, we will translate this into other languages as well. We had a social marketing strategy which was multi-pronged, and my communication folks will use the term 360 degrees, so it actually, you know, tries to address all these things from different angles. So we use mass media, TV, radio ads, billboards, but more importantly, we use community organizations for engagement. Because again, I think when you're trying to reach hard-to-reach populations, a lot of this is through neighborhoods, through people they know, faith-based organizations, community-based organizations, that really spread the partnership of this beyond just usual suspects. So you're not just talking about health organizations, you're talking about, you know, educational organizations, social organizations, neighborhood partnerships. All of them need to be engaged. And we have a really broad engagement. So we had the Walmart partner with us, the Blue Cross Blue Shield partner with us. We had a large McFarland Institute is a faith-based organization that had 140 churches associated with it. So they have partnered with us. So it's a huge partnership because part of this is it's actually a community campaign for a community behavior change, not only an individual behavior change. And so we have then results to see how these different strategies worked out in terms of our success in reaching these hard-to-reach populations or our target populations. So therefore, program evaluation, so this was the program, but an important part of this was we really wanted to learn what would be best strategies when you're trying to impact populations, engage populations for prevention using more innovative technologies. And therefore, it is important that we had a robust evaluation of this program that is looking at different aspects of the program. The mainly two things that we were evaluating is the effectiveness of the social marketing campaign in reaching the target population, and then effectiveness of the program itself. So once people are enrolled, what happens with them? How do they find the program? So we have other evaluations going on. And remember, we basically announced this in June of 2011, last year. And we took 6 months to develop the program, all the messages, everything with focus groups, etc. Piloted it briefly. And then in February, we launched it in New Orleans. And Farzad Mostashari, who is the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, was in New Orleans to launch this. So it has been basically from February to now, October, that we have been collecting data. And as we move further, we'll have more data to report and more evaluation. But these are early results that we wanted to share. The design was a mixed methods. We basically did a baseline population-based survey using random digit dialing, so we know what was happening in the population. That's part of the social campaign that we wanted to assess. And then we have program satisfaction surveys with people who are enrolled and other qualitative and quantitative data analysis for enrollees in the program. As far as the population survey, I'll briefly just talk about them. So the baseline was taken in January. We used the RDD method with 500 people, and that was statistically, knowing what the power would be to give us an idea of how people are using cell phones. Because, again, when you look at the reports and you look at the literature, in terms of how many people are using cell phones, how many are using apps, how many use texting, those numbers range quite a bit. They go from anywhere from 60%, 40%, 90%. So you really don't know in your population what exactly is happening. And you need to know, a lot of healthcare, as all of you know, is very, very local. And unless you understand what is happening locally, you can't really design effective public health programs and population management programs. So we did the baseline in January. But we also had 200 people online, so a web survey, so that those who don't have cell phones are also included, so that you can capture, how many people are not using cell phones, etc. And then we did a follow-up in July, so it was only 7 months between the pre and the post. A population survey has about 700 people. In the population, it's 50%, whites, 36% black, although in the New Orleans population, actually, blacks are proportionally higher. So And that's part of the methodology. So if you use methodology of really dialing people and asking them to do a survey, who answers that? That's a long story altogether in survey methodology with telephones. But 70% were females. 53% were in the 35 to 44 age group, which is part of our target group. 49% had household incomes over 50%. They were about 25% who had household incomes below 25,000 annually, which will definitely in the poverty area. So that's the population survey. And we found that 58% of the total respondents said that they had a cell phone and they were using it for texting. There was another probably 20% or 12% that said that they have a phone, but they don't use it for texting. So they just use it as a phone, which now seems archaic, because phones are supposed to be used for every other thing than talking on the phone, actually. Especially if you ask teenagers, they don't have phones anymore. But 95% of 18 to 29-year-olds have a mobile phone and use it for texting. So depending on the age, of course, these numbers dramatically change. Only 36% of 45 and over said actually 36% did not have access to cell phones. Also, 36% said that they use the cell phone for texting. So this just shows that our focus on the 18 to 45 was not a bad area to focus on in terms of prevention if you are thinking of population and using mobile health. In terms of their frequency of using text messages, as you would expect, that is much higher for the 18 to 29, it's much lower for over 45, but still the average is pretty high, again. And we also tracked, what were different things that we were doing, because as we said, this was a social campaign, so we were holding meetings, we were going to campuses, we were involving churches, so we wanted to see how that changes some of the enrollment. and awareness. So 30% post-campaign, after our initial, at least, mass media campaign and some consumer engagement, had in that population survey heard of Text for Health, which was good, I think, definitely in terms of our effectiveness of the program. In the last part of this, I'll just talk briefly about how many people have already enrolled in the program in these 6-7 months, and then what do we know about them. So this was a 14-week program. So basically, you sign in, and then for 14 weeks, you keep on getting messages, and we capture your data. But then at the end of 14 weeks, we give you the option of continuing the messages. Also, as you enroll, you're given the option that you can write stop at any time, and you will not receive any further messages. So what you see in the first column, which is, you know, that 171 over there, are people who stopped it in the first week for whatever reason. You know, then that's more evaluation to do in terms of what was the reason. But what was interesting, as you see, more than 40%, actually around 45% of the people stayed for the 14-week program, and most of them also continued beyond the 14-week program. So the goal-setting part actually keeps people engaged because they're getting something out of it. And in terms of age distribution, again, you see the target population, 18 to 45, and that's where most of the enrollment was in our program as well. In terms of race, for those who identified what the race was, 63% African-American, so we were actually able to then reach the population that we wanted to reach, which was, a lot of this was because of consumer engagement through direct social marketing. This is a very interesting statistic because by weight, if you look at how many people really set goals for weight reduction over a period of time, and if you look at the first two rows, which are obese and overweight, that were identified obese and overweight, 79% of them actually set a goal, and similarly for overweight, 92% set a goal. So this was, I think, very positive in terms of how people are engaged with the application. Overall, 68% actually. What is, of course, concerning is almost 3/4 of the people who enrolled were overweight or obese. So that's a high number. So in summary then, basically, we realized that the role of consumer engagement is important in designing and marketing applications like this. We also realized that direct social marketing campaigns are an important part of really engaging consumers, more than some of the other media outlets. What we found was that, I think, from the early data that we have seen, is that with those strategies, and because this was not just an app that was thrown at people, it was something that engaged consumers, that we are seeing at least engaging the subpopulations that were target populations for our intervention, whether it's by age, the 18 to 29, 18 to 44, by race, African Americans and those at high risk, or those at risk. And the effectiveness of personalized goal setting, as you saw with overweight, obese, really high percentage of people. And there are further testing that is required for evaluation that we'll be using, participant satisfaction, behavior change, so how do people really, once they find out, do they go and get screened and change some of their behaviors? And then its effect on health outcomes, really, how does it change morbidity and mortality in the disease? Thank you very much.